certificates. What may come as a surprise is that any trust may divide its trust property into shares and issue certificates. The power to issue certificates and bonds, and employ the use of an official seal never has been restricted to corporations. It is well settled law that whatever else most corporations possess beyond their artificiality and right of suit in a corporate name is a mere incident or consequence of incorporation, and not a primary constituent. In fact, most attributes now commonly held as corporate in nature, such as the power of issuing transferable shares, limiting liability of officers, using an official seal, making bylaws, purchasing lands and chattels, are merely the legislative recognition and adoption of natural common law rights any man or a woman sui juris may exercise without permission, much less a charter, from the state. The court in Warner v. Beers clarified this principle most effectively. There are several very useful and beneficial accessory, also spelled accessory, powers or attributes, very often accompanying corporate privileges, especially in moneyed corporations, which, in the existing state of our law, as modified by statutes, are more prominent in the public eye, and perhaps sometimes in the view of our courts and legislatures, than those which are essential to the being of a corporation. Such added powers, however valuable, are merely accessory. They do not in themselves alone confirm a corporate character, and may be enjoyed by unincorporated individuals. Such a power is the transferability of shares. Such, too, is the limited responsibility, liability. So, too, the convenience of holding real estate for the common purposes, exempt from the legal inconvenience of joint tenancy or tenancy in common. Again, there is the continuance of the joint property for the benefit and preservation of the common fund, indissoluble by death or legal disability of any partner. Every one of these attributes or powers, though commonly falling within our notions of a moneyed corporation, is quite unessential to the legality of a corporation, may be found where there is no pretense of a body corporate, nor will they make one if all were combined, without the presence of the essential quality of legal individuality, italics and bold emphasis, and bracket information added. The trustee of an express trust is empowered by the terms and provisions of the trust instrument to issue certificates not only of beneficial interest, but also of capital interest. Generally speaking, beneficial interest is that which is held by the beneficiaries of the trust, who is entitled to a certain proportional share of the trust assets during the life or at the termination of the trust, while capital interest is that which is held by the exchangers who has invested property into the trust, and thus becomes entitled to a certain proportional share of any profits and assets remaining at the termination of the trust. As a rule, the terms and provisions of the trust instrument control the manner in which beneficial and capital interest are to be administered. It should define the rights of interest holders, who, incidental to their acceptance of the interest, are bound under the trust instrument to that extent. But there are certain principles which govern these interests in construing the fundamental classification of the trust. For instance, it is held that where the certificate holders have control over the trust property and or administration of the trust's affairs, the trust arrangement is, in fact, a partnership, in which the shareholders become liable for the acts of the trust. The basic principle is that if it is free from the control of its interest holders, then it is an express trust. This is commonly referred to by courts of equity as the control test, in which control must ultimately rest with the trustees of the trust in order for it to be properly classified as an express trust. The well-settled principle applied by courts of equity is that interest holders, by full legal title and control over the trust property being vested absolutely in the trustees, cannot be considered partners nor agents, and therefore cannot be held liable for the debts of the trust in that manner. Furthermore, the certificates have no determinable fair market value, and, therefore, no gain or loss is recognized until the cost or other basis of the property disposed of has been recovered. In Commissioner of Internal Revenue v. Marshman, the court held that fair market value is determined by property received by the taxpayer, not the fair market value of the property transferred by the taxpayer into the trust. What's more is that certificates are considered not necessarily as chattels, but as documentary evidence of ownership and intangible rights, and, in and of themselves, they are only personal property, not the actual interest or share itself. The interest in an express trust cannot be traded without the approval of the trustees. This is contrasted with the certificate of stock, which courts have long held may be dealt with in the market as a commercial document of value.